Well, since I started on that example, maybe I continue with a little bit that because it very much also relates to what I want to talk about, and this dynamic between regulation and excess, between language and affect, between meaning and mood, is something more and more that we need to pay attention to, and I think it very much deals with the dynamic between private and public control and openness, and I'll tell you how I actually want to enter into that. So I kind of maybe enter into that by way of the airplane example. Might be kind of not, although the plane's kind of coming down, not taking off, but the need to keep both in play always, which I think is very much a challenge for us who are more oriented toward particular history of analysis of visual culture, which relies on language and representation. And I think that what we're seeing all around us today with the rise of webcams, live journals, video sharing sites, mobile technology, blogs, profiles, life casting, and so on, is the rise of what we might call a presentational culture that might exist in distinction to a representational culture. And we're so used to thinking about representation and how everything filters through the scrim of language. And a presentational culture might be something that draws more from the realm of performance, you know, perhaps. Even rhetoric, and it's now more than ever, I think, in the emergence of this new culture, if we want to see it that way, to try to find some combinatory forms for thinking about it, not necessarily emphasizing one or the other. There's a Brazilian theorist named Suele Rolnick, some of you might know, who talks about this, and she says that we have two primary ways of apprehending the world: pattern of form or field of force. And pattern of form deals with the world as it confronts the frames of representation and language. Pattern of field of force is more about an affective transmission, about a kind of resonation, which isn't really so easily captured in language and symbols. So it's a struggle to have to find a vocabulary for it. And this dynamic, this sort of volley, you know, in between, is something I've set out for myself to deal with as an artist and writer. So this, in particularly talking now about this new culture of what we call of self-publication, of self-exposure, of self-display, where the lives of everyday people are suddenly on parade for all of us to see, this new kind of exhibitionistic environment where we're compelled to solicit the attention of others, act for unseen eyes, and to develop new forms of what I might call connective intensity, as if this were somehow the very condition of our continued existence, somehow the marker of our worth. This courting of a new kind of publicness or publicity that arises as the very very condition of self-identification. So needless to say, that's the sort of compels me to resituate this private-public divide. And I've also been someone who's very much talking a lot about the rise of panoptic society and history of panopticism and all that, and using and working with surveillance and tracking technologies. And in some ways, it's very much it's very, very easy or quick to sort of think about this new kind of transparent society as a kind of the fulfillment of the dream of panoptic power, you know. And in a sense, the game is over. But what, as an artist, I think, even more than that, as a thinker, I think I really want to keep open the possibility that there are new sites of transformative agency that we just haven't been able to see yet. And so, rather than thinking about a kind of total surrender to the demands of panoptic power, I like to sort of think about it maybe as the game has changed a little bit. I like to kind of keep open this possibility that's occurred. So in order to do that, sort of one has to attune oneself to be able to see it, and in many ways to become a participant, to kind of jump in, so to speak. And it requires a shift from a distanced critical perspective to a more implicated one, or perhaps a kind of, you know, active volley in between. One must experiment a bit, experiment with roles and degrees of implication. It's a difficult road, and it requires a lot of honesty and courage and soul searching, I guess, in a way, because it's one might find things privately that don't necessarily square with one's public concerns. And this is similar to the difference between what one dreams for and what one thinks one ought to dream for, between private desires and public concerns, between affective intensity and social responsibility. Well, this is the kind of volley that I'm aiming for. One productive route of action coming from history of film and media theory is to lessen one's reliance on thinking about disciplinary control and instead also think in terms of exhibitionistic display. So this dynamic between control and display here, which also you can think about in terms of a dynamic between control and openness. Again, also between a representational and the presentational. And again, not to emphasize or replace one with the other, but to develop a kind of productive volley. So because clearly these new cultures, these new self-publication cultures, these new self-exposure cultures do not resolve easily to questions of visuality and disciplinary power, of perception, power, and language. They willingly submit to the gaze. They court the gaze. They're cultures of showing as much as they are cultures of watching. And when I say display or showing, I want to emphasize again that I'm speaking about in a way as to include affects. I'm not, you know, further extending a thinking of the visual or representational. It's not necessarily something that actually filters through images. So we might think about this also as a interplay again between regulation and resonation, between the repressive and the excessive. Again, Swale Rolnick's distinction between pattern of form and field of force. So this, to do this is very challenging because it lessens our reliance on language and challenges us to develop new combinatory forms. Because these new phenomena, again, when one jumps in, implicates oneself, experiments with roles and positions, moves into an implicated position, away, you know, against the safety of one's distanced perspective, one moves in, one finds that these are not really only texts to be read. These new phenomena that we're finding online, the self-publication phenomena, online but not only online, in other cultural arenas as well, they're not only texts to be read, but they're something that you might call conductive excitations. They're solicitations that are embedded within networks of erotic exchange. This means that they don't only run in one direction, but they flow in a circuit. There are pleasures and affective stimulations that motivate these new acts of connection, sharing, and erotic display for all players on the circuits of production and reception, including both displayer and watcher. Their texts must not only be decoded, but their circuits traversed in implicated ways that destabilize our one-way analyses and their deflections of our own libidinous investments. Because in that sense, it's very easy for us to deflect one's libidinous investment in what one sees elsewhere, outside. But in the implicated sense, one must account for it. It's a very difficult road. And in order to read these conductive excitations and these connective intensities, it's also very difficult to think about a politics, because the political language we have, the political debates around privacy fail really to account for these, and there's a struggle that we have. Again, there's an excess here to be accounted for. I'm thinking again of the man on the airplane, the screeching man on the airplane, this kind of a sense of eruption, overcoming regulation. There's an excess always. And an excess always exceeds the political meanings that we might ascribe to it. So to encounter this excess, to deal with it, requires a political stance that is less oppositional than compositional. So my video that I'm going to present to you, Homefront, deals with this dynamic between voyeuristic control and exhibitionistic display. It moves between disciplinary culture and display culture. The video is I produced it in 2006, and it's a three-channel installation. What we'll see today is more of a QuickTime video of it. So you have to understand the sound and picture quality isn't necessarily the best as what you see in a large installation. In Homefront, we begin with a monitor and end with a mirror. And that's sort of significant. But the mirror is not so much a surface of display as it is a kind of event portal for a transmissional circuit of some kind. What we see in the video, the stage is set for a potential crime and confrontation. Two actors appear, a man and a woman, who evoke popular filmic stereotypes. And also, this is my first video that I made since I moved to Hollywood, so it's maybe a bit of Hollywood in it this way. They engage in an elaborately mediatized dance of some kind. The actors desire each other, but their acts are infused with a kind of presumptive suspicion. They analyze and they deceive one another and themselves as they both solicit and block erotic contact. They circulate within the potent mixes of contemporary entertainment and security cultures. And that's, for me, also a cultural landscape of a potent mix of both of those, security and entertainment culture. It's becoming more and more implicated. So as they circulate within these potent mixes of security and entertainment culture, they embody mutually reinforcing mechanisms of pleasure and paranoia, resonation and reflection. There's a volley between discipline and excess, watching and showing, language and affective stimulation. So another few minutes and we'll get the video. With this work, I make the assumption that that security technologies are now becoming implicated in entertainment forms and vice versa. I suggest that control technologies, surveillance, monitoring, and tracking systems are not only media of control, they are media of self-reflection and self-awareness. There's a reciprocity between the way that control technologies function and the way that identity coalesces. And so what we see here is a kind of splintering and reassembly of the self a playing out of the self along multiple identity lines in a way that I think is particular to a post-cinematic network culture and its technological discursive supports. So in this way, with Homefront, I want to perform a kind of analysis of spectatorship and identification that's resonant with a new regime of security entertainment, a landscape of observational and presentational networks that filters into the imaginary in unexpected ways and which perhaps generates new forms of agency, a landscape of reciprocal vision and multiple temporality, multiple time strands, where viewpoints alternate between optical systems, a landscape where we are both seer and seen, the subject and object of perception. Okay, so we'll start now.
I am watching. That we were desired enough, thought worthy enough. I suspected you. I followed you. I couldn't help
see
it.
Her. They are following
they
us.
They see me.
Someone is watching me.
This was not he.
Guilt.
Guilty.
Convict me.
I was
me.
My incrimination.
You followed someone else.
Love us a camera.
Image.
Judge.
Love
betray
me.
I'm watching myself. I am watching myself as they saw me. I am watching myself as you.
Place. position. Avoid. Evidence wanted from me produces me.
Vindicate.
I am watching myself. Myself as they saw me.
You entered her home. I am watching you with her. At this point, she walked over to you. You touched her. You touched me. You touched her. Touch me now. Touch me now.
Touch it.
Touch it.
This is how I will have seen her.
This is how you will have looked to me.
This is how I will have seen
you. This is how I will have looked to
you. I see myself as you. Look how she looks at you. It is not I.
Look.
Look. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me.
Look
at me.
Look
here. Look at me. Look here.
That I would become me at the onset of your capture. Take shape through the disintegration of your face.